This is Bookshelf Banter, where you'll get to meet new indie authors. Be sure to check them out. You just may discover your new favorite author. Welcome to this week's episode of Bookshelf Banter. This week I'm talking to author Autumn Bardot. Autumn Bardot is the author of stories about fearless women and dangerous passions. She writes historical fiction, historical erotica, and contemporary fantasy. Her four-book urban fantasy series is written under the pen name L.Z. Murray. She's a wife, mom, grandma, and teacher. Because that doesn't keep her busy enough, she has a YouTube channel and a podcast for new writers with lots of writing tips, author tools, and inspiration. Autumn writes best at home in her sunny California backyard while vacationing at the beach. She bakes great chocolate chip cookies, drinks too much coffee, buys too many shoes, and loves to write stories about courageous but flawed women who succeed despite the odds. And she always spices it with a healthy dollop of romance. So, Autumn Bardot, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Heather. It's great to finally talk to you.
Finally, I know we had to put it off a little bit, and now you don't feel well, so I feel bad. But you've had a lot going on in your life. You just had a grandchild.
I did. My third.
Oh, wow. That's great. Wonderful. I can't wait until those days. Get these kids out of the house and then, you know, give the grandkids back.
That's the nice thing about grandkids. You can give them back. You can, like today, I took one for ice cream for her birthday and pizza. And then we gave them back. We gave her back all sugared up. Here, mom.
Here you go. Good luck with this one. Great. So when do you find time to write? Because you're not just doing that. You have a podcast, you're writing, you know, you're a teacher too?
Yes.
Oh my God. Yes.
So I teach full time. I'm a language arts teacher.
Oh, wow. What grade?
I teach 10th, 11th, and 12th grade.
Oh, bless you. They're fun.
I like my 12th graders. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then I teach in a pretty international program for the 11th graders. So that's higher than AP. So they're very, very motivated to.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
It's a hard class to prepare for, but they're good kids.
They're good. They're good. Yes. They're good kids. And so like you, I also have a podcast that's connected to my YouTube.
Oh, cool. Very cool. What do you talk about? Do you like interview other writers or just share writing tips and stuff?
I mostly share my writing tips and experiences as a both traditionally published author and an indie published author. Once in a while, I think I've done it twice now. I've interviewed another author who specialized in a particular Tudor historical fiction. And I have a friend who is a developmental editor. And that was a pretty long, that was almost, I want to say 45 minutes, 50 minutes, where she talked about developmental editing, because so many new writers especially don't know exactly what that is.
Right, right. And they don't know the difference between, you know, a developmental edit and like a line edit and proofreading.
Exactly. And so I think I'm going to have her on a few more times because it was a very popular, you know, YouTube, and people want to know more. Like, when I get that developmental edit back, now what do I do with it?
Yeah. And it's overwhelming too, because you get it back and you're like, so I have to change everything is what you're saying.
Right. You hope not, but mostly it's just me. And I mean, I've been doing this for 10 years now.
Oh, wow. So that's a very long time.
It is. And I feel like when I was starting out, there wasn't as much out there as there is now.
Yes.
And I mean, now you can find so many Facebook groups, and there's lots of, you know, there's quite a few writing channels. And I thought, and I thought, I'm going to do this. And it was during COVID, so I was teaching at home, didn't have the commute. And I thought, I want to do this.
Yeah.
Like, I have a lot of advice I can give. I have a lot of experiences, a lot of fails, a lot of learning the hard way.
Yes.
And so I wanted to share that with new writers and beginning writers and, you know, writers that are struggling with certain things. Because I teach literary analysis, I know it sounds kind of snoozeville, but because I teach literary analysis, I can look at writing and those nuances and those fine-tuned things that often writers, they feel it, but they don't know how to bring it to their own manuscript.
Right, exactly. Yes, I know what you're saying. Like you put it on paper and you don't know how it got there.
Right. Or how you can change it and just make it, you know, take it from okay to wow, amazing.
Yeah.
So it's those little tweaks. It's really like with any art that you see, right? If it's whether it's like, I'm thinking like artwork, right? Somebody draws something, paints something. And if you just look at it and paint it, you're like, okay, I can paint by the numbers, right? But
yeah.
It's when you really look at their brush strokes, right? The brush they use, which way they went, how they did something. And that's really not so different from a writer and their own craft.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like what you said. I agree what you said about, like, you know, you've been doing this for 10 years and you've made your mistakes and you wish like something like that had been out when you started. And I feel that way too. I mean, I feel like all of a sudden over the last 2 years or so, there's so many people coming out of the woodwork with like help and Facebook groups. And it's like, you know, I watch several different videos every day. These videos weren't there 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And sometimes it gets a little overwhelming because you get to a point where you're like, oh my God, I did everything wrong. You know? And you kind of have to like start all over again. But it is very good that, you know.
In the beginning, you do. It really just is a huge learning curve. And I like to make my videos about usually under 15 minutes, maybe 20 to 15 minutes, because sometimes that's all we can take.
Right. And that's good because it gives you kind of a focus. I think after like 15, 20 minutes, you lose the focus and you're like, okay, I'm on to the next thing.
Right.
Or I want to take what I just learned and do it. And they do say breaking up your day. I don't know if you do this with your students in like smaller chunks is better.
Always.
Yeah.
Always. Because really people have, I really want to say maybe 15, 20 minutes and then they want to move on to something else.
Yes. Yeah. Or, you know, onto a different piece of whatever you're writing.
Right.
You know, bouncing around.
Exactly.
So I read Goddess Inc. and I thought it was adorable.
Thank you.
I don't know if you were going for adorable, but
I was
really cute and very enjoyable. It was like a rom-com fantasy.
Yes.
Where did you get the idea for that?
You know, it was COVID.
Oh, that's COVID. It's just responsible for everything.
It was COVID. And I had some urban fantasy that I first wrote. That was my first writing. And then I did historical fiction. And I thought, you know, the historical fiction is deep and requires a lot of, it's like heavy. It's a heavy write. So you're going into the research and you need to come up with these, it's the characters. And I just wanted something fun and light. I didn't want any heaviness. There was enough to contend with COVID and with teaching remotely that I just wanted something fun to write. And I wish I could say I even remember exactly how it came to be, but I have a bookshelf of different gods and goddesses in mythology. And I thought, you know, what if four goddesses were fired? Like, it would be fun to write that, to write that. And I wanted something, like I said, fun, but I also like wanted it glam, because also during COVID, I was like watching all these, you know, glam Instagrammers. They will have their like their YouTube channel with clothes. And I'm like, ooh, clothes. I'm not going anywhere right now, but I love that outfit. And so I wanted to bring some glam to it. And because I'm a woman, I wanted to make it very woman-centric, like a feel-good book about women's empowerment. And that's what I was going for, something that would make you feel good about yourself, about women in general, but have it be fun and have that glam to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the goddesses, like, they were very smart. They had a lot of knowledge. You had to do some research on that.
Well, they lived thousands of years, so they had to, they had to be smart, right? Yeah. I feel like there wasn't as much research as my historical fiction, which is always very research intensive. Yes. But as I was writing this, I knew I had to look up certain things. And so I think probably the heaviest amount of research I did with Goddesses Inc. was there. I wanted 4 goddesses. I thought that was a good number because you have, you know, I could have put them in different, have them have different personalities, right? Mm-hmm. And 4 seems to be good with that. And I have, like I said, I have some goddesses book and I basically flipped through, not even flipped through, I read the goddesses book. And then I made charts because I wanted my goddesses to be from all over the world. All over the world. I thought that was super important. They had to be of different cultures.
Oh, okay.
And they had to do different things. Like they all couldn't be the goddess of something. I wanted that. And they needed to be obscure. So the 3 of them are pretty darn obscure. If you look them up, there's very, very little about them. Mnemosyne, the Greek goddess, has the most written about her. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to make her the main, because she's going to bring a lot to it. And especially with her being the goddess of memory and having those 9 muse children, I thought she'd be a lot of fun to do because it would impact her in a much different way than it would the 3 other goddesses.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, it seemed like it was very centered on her rather than, I mean, not that the other ones weren't involved, but it was very centric on her and her experiences.
Exactly. And when I chose the 4 goddesses, which took a while, I was at first, I thought I'm going to write one about each goddess, like a book about each goddess. Mm. And then they're all going to go through the books. And then I thought, well, maybe I could split it all up, something like Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. And then I thought, that's too much. That's too much. So it kind of just emerged that way. Mnemosyne for me was the natural fit to be the lead on it. And then Ina was kind of her foil. And I felt like she just had all the sass and attitude that I wish I had. And Narit, the Thai goddess, she was all the calm I wish I had. You know, and the beauty and the grace. And then Axie to me also, like, they all felt part of me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Axie felt so vulnerable and unsure about herself. So in a way I related to all of them. And I've had some readers actually say, like, I related to all of the goddesses because of this. So I loved hearing that because it shows us that we, you know, we are all like all of these goddesses. They're all inside of us in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it was very, I wasn't sure what I was going to get out of it. You know, I wasn't, well, because I started off, I'm like, oh, this is, you know, almost like, it's like a rom-com. Uh-huh. And then I was like, you know, but you could tell you had like a, you know, a passion for causes and social justice, and you kind of weave that through it. You know, was that intentional?
It was, because I feel because they were goddesses that had lived forever, they've been there, done that, seen that.
Yeah.
And I think maybe, yeah, that's what you picked up on, because they have this attitude of everything's the same. It just it's a little bit different, but the people are same, the politics are the same, things just And so, yeah, forever. And so they had a much bigger understanding than we do of something. I like to tell my students, like, don't just be in the forest and looking at the trees, and just don't be in an airplane overlooking the forest. Be the person looking at the globe. And I think somehow the goddesses are able to do that just because they've been around so very often. But you did say something about the environment and social justice. And I think a lot of that is very right now, like political, right? It's very political. Yeah. And one of the things I always discuss or have mentioned a few times in my videos, my YouTube channel, is like, stay away from the politics. Because it's just too hard to get somebody angry. And I want people from all sides to read the books. I don't want, that's why I'm very not political on any of my Facebook pages or any of my pages. I just stay away from that. But I think, for me, it's about empowering women to be fully themselves and to embrace their talents, like to live fully, to take chances and to not be afraid, because I see so often that women hold themselves back from fear. Like they're afraid to do something. They're worried what other people will think of them, what men will think of them. You know, are they going to get the guy? Are they going to keep the guy? Or what is that other woman going to think of me? And for me, and I'm going to be 60 years old this year, I think women are happiest when they are happy with themselves.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's absolutely true. And I feel like that's a lot of what I took away from the book was about, they came to this conclusion where, I don't want to give anything away, but they came to a conclusion at the end. And then when they started to not care, I don't want to say they didn't care, but they started to just say, to heck with everything. Mm-hmm. That's when everything kind of came together for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. When they were able to take the risks and be who they were and be proud of that.
Yeah.
And I feel like, in a lot of ways, the older I've gotten, and you've heard the saying, it's like the more you know, the more you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, or the more you realize
you didn't know. And I think we can always improve who we are, what we think about things. I think there's so much room for improvement our whole life. And I tell my students, like, do you want to be the old person who's wise? Mm. Or do you want to be that old person who just didn't learn their lesson?
Or that is so set in their ways.
Yes.
And I think in interviewing so many people for this podcast, it seems to be almost like a common theme where everybody that is successful, everybody that is, doing well, writing wise, is so open to learning new things and having new experiences.
Absolutely. You have to be. I think it improves your writing. It improves
you. Yes.
It makes you realize that, because that's one of the issues I see a lot with new and beginning writers. They will say, I did a first draft and it's great. And you're like, no, maybe not.
Maybe reread that thing again.
And they don't know what to change, or they don't know. They're not open to somebody saying, this is how this reads and it needs to change. And that's hard when somebody tells you that it's not great, that it needs improvement.
Right. You know? Because when you put it down on that paper, you thought it was coming from your heart. And I think that's a lot of when your first draft is more like this heartfelt draft, and it doesn't have all those nuances of, like, the plot isn't, fleshed out, or the characters aren't as fleshed out as they should be. And then when you go back and you do it the second and the third and the 80th time, that's when you get that all in there. But I remember being in school, being in 10th, 11th, 12th grade, and just being like, well, this is my first draft. I don't want to look at it ever again. regardless of whether I would have gotten an A, had I looked at it again, I just bled on this paper. Mm-hmm. And that is all I'm doing, mm-hmm. And sometimes it's really hard to go back and and say, you know what, this isn't what it could be, and right. admit that, especially as a kid. So
oh, especially as a kid. Yeah, nobody wants to revise their paper. They go, I don't know what to do. You're like, well, I can tell you.
This part here, yeah, this is terrible.
Yeah, it's that whole thing. I mean, I do a lot of YouTubes just on that first draft and exactly how, what you need to look at and how you need to change. And I spend a lot of time on that because just for that very reason that you said, because people are just like, I don't know what to do. And if you don't know what to do, it is hard to change it. But once you know it, you go, oh, you're right. I need to change it. So I think that's the more I can encourage new writers to really learn the craft, they're just going to have a lot more success and feel really good about their writing.
Yeah, I agree. How did you start writing? Like, was it just something you've always done, or, you know, it just came out of nowhere where you felt you had to write?
I have always loved write. I've always loved it. My mom swears that I was writing stories with a crayon, like scribbling and saying it was a story. I went to school, didn't write, had four kids, didn't write, but read a lot. Like I went to the library and I was just picking up tons of books every week at the library. So that was my like huge writing. And then I had a couple divorces because this is my third marriage. Oh, and wow. With my third marriage, the attorney says, you need a job. I'm thinking, I have four kids. Isn't that a job? Isn't that a job enough?
That was enough.
Right? So I went back to school. My oldest at the time was 16, and I had a 6 and a 16-year-old. I have four kids. So the oldest was 16 and the youngest was 6. And I went back to college. I had 2 years, I think, many years ago. I went back and I thought, you know, I'm going to be a teacher so that I can stay home with my kids during the summer. That was pretty much the reason why. And so that took a lot of time. And so I was writing papers. And when I was teaching, of course, now I'm teaching literary analysis, right? Which is pretty deep, heavy stuff. And I'm thinking, I really like this. And I was, you know, just chatting with a friend, and she was telling me about, I can't even remember the name of the author who wrote a whole like urban fantasy series. And I remember reading a couple of the books and I'm thinking, I can write this. Like, I can write this, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't. I was just there and I didn't really have time, really. I just didn't have any time. And so it was, I remember very clearly, it was the day after I finished my last master's class, my master's of art in education. And my husband says, what are you going to do for the summer? And because I wasn't going to teach summer school, I'd had enough of school, right? And I said, I'm going to write a novel. And he looks at me and he just starts laughing. He goes, oh, okay. And it was something I had been wanting to do forever. So, I mean, I started super late, but it was always something I wanted to do. And you know, when my kids were young, there was no computers. There was just the typewriter. There was no internet. And with, you know, all of that, it's so much easier to write. So much easier to write. So I think that helped too. So after the master's class, I just started writing. That was 10 years ago. And I never looked back.
Wow. That's, I mean, you had a lot on your plate. You still found time to write.
I do. I am. You had mentioned earlier that, yeah, I do. I think you had said, how do you find the time to write? And yeah. I know, you know, a lot of people are like me. They have full-time jobs. Even if you're a mom, that's a full-time job. Like that's a 24-hour a day job. Okay. No time off. I don't have to find time. I have to steal it. There's no more time. I have to squeeze it. I have to steal it. I have to decide what to toss. So like today, I'm looking around and I'm in my my studio. I call it my studio. It's really a spare bedroom with a ring light. But anyway, I have a stack of laundry of clothes that need to be ironed. It's been sitting there for about a week. I have a desk that is piled high with things that I have to do. I have a refrigerator in the garage that probably needs to be cleaned out.
Oh, God, so
yeah. You can relate, right?
Yes. So, it's not the refrigerator in the garage. It's the actual refrigerator that needs to be cleaned out. And there's something rotten in there. But
there's that's right? It's always something that a mom has to do.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You have to decide, what am I not going to do?
Yeah.
That's it.
And it's impossible to balance it all. Like, balance is such an illusion. And, you know, a lot of people come on, not necessarily come on here, but I hear a lot of different other podcasts where they're like, well, you know, you have to balance everything, and you can't. And like you said, you have to pick what's important today, you know?
You have to pick what's important today. And for me, family comes first.
Right.
So, you know, right now what I've been doing is, I've been working, I've put aside the historical fantasy. Well, it's not really fantasy. It's historical fiction with some fantasy elements in it, magical elements. Mm-hmm. I put that aside because I needed to finish a master's class program that I'm going to be doing for the historical fiction company. So I needed to finish making those videos. And it took me a couple months to write the master's class and get all the PDFs together. And then, of course, you have to video it. And the trick with the videoing is, of course, I have to put my face on.
I hate video. It's just so stressful. Like, I'll sit here and watch some of these, like, reels and stuff, and I'm like, what? I can't even fathom how long that had to take you to do this 30-second video. Not even 30 seconds, some of these. I'm like, I can't. I know TikTok is very good for writers. YouTube is very good for writers, but I just can't do it.
It really does. I have a Zoom group that I joined every Thursday. We've been hanging out for the last couple of years, and they said, you know, how do you get all this done? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I kind of squeeze in certain things, but then I also have times where, I mean, I usually make my YouTubes Saturday afternoon or Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. Can't make them Saturday morning because everybody in my cul-de-sac gets their lawn mowed. So yeah. It's all these weird things, right? And then I have to put the face on. And I usually write the YouTubes during lunch at school.
Yeah.
My lunch is my lunch. So I usually write what I'm going to be saying and doing. But then you've got the editing. And I know you had mentioned something about wanting to go on to YouTube. And from extending your podcast onto YouTube. And I tell my husband, I got to put the face on. And you have to be totally up.
Yeah. There are advantages. Now, my last podcast of this season is going to be with somebody who does a podcast, and she does it via video. And we had a practice run last week, and I was like, this is great. I like to be able to interact with her. Like, you can see me nodding my head and all that. But I'm like, I was worried about my nostril hair the entire time. I'm like, this is not good, because here I am like, oh my God, my hair looked good for 5 minutes and now it's flat, you know?
I have had videos where I'll make the whole video, and I've got this great video camera. It's this Sony VD something amazing video camera, mostly just for videoing, and it opens up and you can see yourself, but it's still like small what you're looking at. And then I'll I'll put it onto my computer, open it up, and I'm like, what? My hair. Oh, I am not making that video again.
You have written all sorts of books. If you wrote a memoir, what would the title be?
If I wrote a memoir, now that's a tricky question. I think I would have to call it Blooming. Blooming.
Like a flower,
like blooming, the verb. And here's why. I'm a late bloomer. I think
you're doing it right.
And I think that I've had a lot of let's say fertilizer that I've had to deal with over the years.
And that's a nice way to put it.
Right? We want to keep it PG, PG podcast. And I think that made me strong and resilient, but I felt like I was trapped in a bud stage, like the bud stage for decades. And if I know, I don't know what your like what your demographics is are for your listeners or your readers, but I just remember feeling like I've got all these kids and they take so much time and I can't do anything with my life, you know? And it was frustrating. And I also think that during that like time, I didn't have enough, let's say, symbolic sun and not enough like symbolic water, right?
Right.
But then when I went back to school at 40 and finished my degree and began teaching and then got two more degrees, I felt like I began to bloom. And I wish I could say that I found the strength all on my own, but you know, I got to give full props and cred to my third husband, who was really an instrumental part of my blooming. He's always believed in me. He has always supported me. He's always on Team Autumn. And so he allowed me to bloom, if that makes sense.
It totally does.
I think that we've known each other for 20 years. We've been together 20 years. And I think I've done more in 20 years than I ever thought I ever would. And I took risks, especially with writing, right? That right. I thought I never would. And had, you know, success and found an agent. And like two of my books are traditionally published. The erotica is traditionally published.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then, but you know what? You don't, unless you're making, I only get 7%. Let's just say it that way. And you don't have a lot of control, but that did do wonders for me knowing that, ooh, I can write.
Yes.
Because when a team of editors says, hey, this is amazing. You're like, oh, okay, well, good. Then I feel good, right? But I think those 20 years, all of that, it's been a very empowering experience. And I think one that my own children, especially my two daughters, learn from, which makes me really happy because they have now taken risks because they're like, why not?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're absolutely proof that it's never too late. I think a lot of people get in their head that, and I've been there myself where I'm like, well, you know, I'm 46 years old right now. I can't reinvent myself, but why can't I?
You can.
I am getting to that point where I'm like, but why can't I? This is just halfway there.
You can absolutely do that. And I think the more we have, especially women, the more we have success, the more we come into our own. And when we come into our own, I think the success is a byproduct of that. We just get stronger and we just keep doing. And, you know, I've always tell my children, like, my children and my student children who, you know, I had them the last day on Friday. And I said, look, happiness is transitory. It's a feeling, but contentment and satisfaction with your life will help you cope with anything. And if you can achieve that, like, you win.
And I feel like that goes kind of full circle to the Goddess Inc. book because, you know, they reinvented themselves. They found their happiness and their contentment in a different way than they thought possible.
They did. And in fact, all of my books are like that. My Merkaba series is under a different pen name. It's LZ Marie. It was my first series. And it's about a shy, kind of withdrawn bookworm, wannabe almost professor who has to take on this new role and really is very afraid about it, but then learns all about herself. Kind of, it's a long adventure. It's a four series, a romantic adventure. And then even my historical, my erotica, Legends of Lust, it's mythology from all over the world that I just ramped up to the naughty level. And it's all about powerful women. Like, it's what I want to read about. That's what I like reading about. That's what I like to write about. Confessions of a Sheba Queen, also historical erotica. I take this enigmatic woman. And that was fascinating, the research for that. And I'm thinking, how was she so powerful? How did she do this? So I really got to explore, you know, the mythology behind her and her reign. Goddesses Inc., of course. And then, but even my historical fiction, Dragon Lady, which is about the real pirate, Zengying Cao, and how she was a pirate of, she's the most successful pirate in the world. And she starts as a prostitute.
Get out. Oh,
it wow. is fascinating. And her life was fascinating. And she had so much to overcome because all the other pirates in the fleet were men. And so basically, I don't want to give anything away, but I trace her rise to how she became such a successful pirate. And then even how she gets out of it at the end, which is phenomenal. The Impaler's Wife is about the real Dracula's wife. He had a Hungarian wife. It's his real wife. It's two POVs in there. And I tell her story, I tell his story, but it's also how she becomes powerful in her own right. And of course, The Emperor's Assassin, which is about the real Locusta of Gaul. And she was Emperor Nero's personal poisoner. And she began as an herbalist.
Oh, wow.
So I like to write about powerful, vulnerable, flawed women. That's my thing.
I'd like to read stuff. I just read something recently. What was it about? Oh, The Codebreakers in World War
yes.
II?
Yes.
I forgot what it was called, though. It was very, very long. It was probably a little longer than it needed to be, but it was so, like, interesting that, you know, mm-hmm. all these women were at the bottom of, you know, at the bottom of the food chain, and they were doing, like, all the really important work.
Yes. Yes. I like writing it, and I like reading about that.
What are you working on now?
Well, right now, at this moment, I'm actually going to finish up my master's class. Mm-hmm. So I've got maybe 3 more videos to make for that. So I'm hoping to get that done in the next 2 weeks because school will be letting out. And then I'm going to go back to my historical fiction with some elements of magic. That's about 20,000 words in right now. And when I do go back to it, I've been doing like a real time kind of thing on YouTube where I tell you exactly what I did that week and why I did it and my issues and problems kind of. So people can see that, hey, just whatever phase you are at the book, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to run into issues. So I'm going to be really happy to get back to that. However, I have 2 more that I really want to write to.
Oh,
but
I only have
6 weeks for summer. So
that's all you get?
That's all we get. We start beginning of August again.
Oh God. We have 10 weeks. I'm a school nurse. Oh, we have okay. 10 weeks. Thank God. Because that's where I always say I'm going to get so much done in the summer. And then it becomes like this, oh, I'll do it tomorrow thing. But this summer I am putting the nose to the grindstone and I'm getting it done.
And you know what? Find your best, like I call it hot brain, like when you can do that the best. And for me, it's morning.
Yes, me too. And you know what? What ends up happening, I'm not going to do it this year. Like I'd get up and I'd like do my crossword puzzle. And then I'd be like, okay, now I'm going to run. Now I'm going to, you know, do my exercise. So then, mm-hmm. then I'd take a shower and then I'd be tired and it'd be time for napping. So I'm not going to do the exercising first thing. I'm going to just go balls to the wall with the, you know, with the writing first thing in the morning, get it out of the way, and then take on the rest of the day, you know?
That is so funny. That is so funny you say that because I decided, because, you know, you're right. We need to exercise.
Yes.
Stimulates your, you know, more blood flow to your brain.
Yeah.
But I decided I'm going to get up at 6:30. I'm going to write for 2 hours before it gets too hot here in Southern California. I'm going to get on my row machine. Then I'll write 2 more hours. Maybe we're looking at 12 o'clock. If I can put in 4 or 5 good hours. And a reason I'm going to put the row machine in the middle of the writing is because then I can be thinking while I'm rowing.
Well, and you also taking a break too,
Right,
like we
right.
talked about earlier, you gotta kind of like take a break and do it. I like that a lot. I think I may follow your schedule, not with the rowing machine, but with that, whatever I decide to do that day. You gotta start your brain a little bit and
You
then
do.
get the blood flowing and then restart your brain. I like it. And then I'll take a nap.
And that's right. I think that's, and for me, just if I have coffee, I'm gonna be awake. So I'm just gonna sit down and, you know, like they say, sitting your butt in the chair and just doing it is just key, because I think we just have to start getting in the groove, and then the brain starts
Yeah.
opening up, and then the ideas start flowing.
When does your summer break start?
It's going to start in June 3rd.
June 3rd. And I will check in on you
Okay.
and say, is you sitting that butt in that chair 2 hours in the morning? And
I because really that's it. That's my best time to write, and
yeah.
I can do a revision in the evening when I come home from school. I can't do a first draft. Like, to me,
No.
a first draft is maximum imagination time.
Right. And you're drained. Like,
You
I
are.
mean, I'm in a school. I understand what you're going through on a daily basis. It is draining. By the time you leave that place, you're like, I can't think anymore today. Nobody can ask me questions.
Right.
I can't problem solve anymore today. I'm done.
That's exactly what it is. And then we come home, and I don't want to sound sexist, but I mean, men come home and my husband's dinner is made. Either I've made it, or bless my heart, my son, he's 28, he lives at home. He makes dinner. And I'm like, do you know how
Oh,
great this is that you make dinner?
that's excellent.
Right?
That's
And
wonderful.
it's just, I can write another hour.
So where can we find you? Where can my listeners get
Oh
a
my
hold of
gosh.
you?
You can find my books everywhere. I mean, they're on all the different platforms. You can find me on Instagram, and it's all under Autumn Bardot. You can find me on TikTok. You can find me on my website, autumnbardot.com, on Pinterest, on Twitter, on Facebook page. I have three groups. I have Club Autumn, for, you know, my people who read me, and for people who listen to my podcast. If there's something like a PDF, I will put it in the file section. If there's a new cover or something like that, I'll post all of that stuff. I also have two Facebook groups. One is Write Better, Author Smarter, and that is a group that I do with my friend who used to live up the street but now lives about a half hour away. And she's been doing author interviews. So she stopped while her kitchen was getting redone because it was too loud. But
Oh
she's
God.
gonna, right? But she's gonna
I can
pick.
understand. We were supposed to have a thunderstorm tonight. I'm like, oh, come on, no thunderstorm while I'm trying to
No,
record this,
I know, right? Right. And then I also have a group called the Historical Fiction Fans Book Club. And it's me and a reviewer who run that. And that is for historical fiction fans and historical fiction writers. So if you have any historical fiction writers out there, I'm a big believer in you have to do some self-promotion, and sometimes you just don't know where to go. So we allow writers to post something once a day
Oh, very cool.
on
Very
the site,
cool.
and it's been growing. I think we have quite a few people in that group now, and we have some heavy hitters, because the reviewer, she's a big time reviewer, and she knows all the New York Times bestselling authors. So if it's a historical fiction author, they're in the group,
Oh, good.
and they're posting. And then I have Wednesday's blog day and blog or vlog day, and you can post your blog, your vlog, whatever it is, if it's historical fiction.
You're helping a lot of people out. I
Well,
like that.
I thank you. I think that's important. I think that, you know, it was funny. I was on a group, and I was just kind of, you know, how you follow the, you know, what they're saying. And somebody, a mom, was lamenting that she just didn't have the time to write the books. And you know, so I'm reading the feed, I'm reading the trail, whatever it is. And I said, you know what? I've been a mom for a long time, and just remember, you can always write your books. You can always they'll maybe not now, maybe not next week, maybe not in a year, but you can always write your books. And then I said, you know, here's the thing. Your books won't come to your funeral. Huh. Your people come to your funeral. Your family comes to your funeral. And so I know that's all kind of sad and depressing, but I think that puts things in perspective in a lot of ways, right? Because they're important. And as much as we love to write and we are filled by it and it brings us joy and it's our passion, ultimately it's family at the end that, and when you, and how this comes around to helping people, I'm 60, you know, you kind of look at things at 60, right? You're looking at your retirement. You're like, how long am I going to live? Right. I mean, my grandmother lived to 102.
Oh, very nice genes.
Right. I know those are some cool genes there. But I think if I know that I have helped people really help them further their own writing life, their own writing dream and passion, that's just going to make me feel good.
Yes. Yeah, no, that is true. I think that's why a lot of people, and you have that teaching in you.
Yes.
You know, where you want to, you know, spread your knowledge. You want to help other people. And I think that's very important about writers, because I think a lot of us have that kind of mentality where it's like, okay, there is room for everyone here.
There is.
There are people that are cutthroat. I have met them.
Yes. You know. Yes.
But I think for the most part, and for almost everybody that I've interviewed, it's like, I have no problem helping you because I know you down the road would help me. You know, that kind of thing. Like, you give me 10 minutes of your time, maybe I can help you with something, you know, down the road from now. And I think that's the great thing about writers groups, especially the mom writers group, because I think we all see that potential, you know, that we can help each other, and it doesn't take away anything from us. In fact, it kind of like fills you up a little bit.
It really does. And you never know. I one of the things I have on my YouTube channel is the importance of making connections.
Yeah.
Because connections beget connections. And you never know when you help somebody how they're going to end up helping you, right, or who they know. And it's really those connections and making those connections. And they're so hard to make in the beginning because you just don't know anybody. And it's not like you can walk around saying, hey, be my friend, you know?
Yeah. And you're also very self-conscious, and you just think that everybody else is kind of scary. You know,
yes.
You're like, oh my God, they're going to think I'm an idiot because I'm asking this question. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's something so simple. Like, I was in one of the writers groups, and somebody asked something about, hey, how do you publish your book? And I was like, oh, I hope nobody goes after this person because, you know, we were all there. Yes. And people were very kind, and they answered, you know, appropriately. And I was like, whew, you just never know.
And they could have really taken them to task because you're right. We get those questions a lot. And you're just like, oh, that's not a quick answer.
Or like, are you in the right group here?
You have to start somewhere, right?
Exactly.
And that's when I think of all of those things that I didn't know in the beginning. And I think, like, one of my more popular videos is how to write a bio when you're a new writer.
Oh, that's so helpful. Is that on your YouTube?
It is. And
I have to go watch that.
Because I see what people have on there. Like, I'm like, no, don't write that.
I always waffle between, okay, am I going to be funny and witty in this? Or am I going to be like really serious in this bio?
It's tough. And they always want you when you have either with your Twitter bio or your Instagram bio, or even when you have to write your first bio for your first book and you have to put it on your author page. Right. And mm-hmm. My bio has changed so many times in 10 years. And I look back, I'm like, hey, I have a lot. Like, I was writing one for, because I did, two, for the historical fiction. No, what was it? It was the Historical Novel Society conference this past year. I hosted two of the sessions. One was on, basically it was like YouTube and me, like a YouTube for dummies. And the other one was symbolism and the importance and how to use symbolism. And so I gave those sessions for the Historical Novel Society, which was really cool because it was international. And when I was, you had like a space for your bio, and I put my whole bio in and it said too many characters. I'm like, oh, finally. Because usually I would sit there and think, what have I done? I don't know. I got nothing.
Oh gosh. No, your bio is probably very long.
But after, it takes you doing all of those things and stepping out of your comfort zone and just saying, oh, you know what the heck, I'm going to go do this, that you start getting like a little bit of cred and a little bit of cred. And so then you get to that point where you're like, oh, look, I've done this and this. Oh, I feel kind of good about myself. Of course, there's always going to be people, right, who are just so amazing. You're like, oh, I'll never be them. But that's okay. I'm me and I'm my best me. And that's all that matters.
and I want to be you when I grow up. Finally. Because you're very, very inspirational.
Oh, thank you.
Really, it is an inspiration to know that, A, it's not too late to do things, and mm-hmm. you can do them right, too. It's, you know, you're not just flying by the seat of your pants because you're doing it right, and you're helping other people do it right as well. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I enjoy it. And like I said, your children, they're there. They're amazing. They can help you, lift you up. It's really when your children are a lot older that all the benefits come back.
Yeah.
So that's why I just like, I just remember like all those four kids, constant noise, all this stuff. And I'm just thinking like, I just want to do something with my life and I can't because there's too much noise and there's always some lesson or some game I have to drive to. And I just felt like, ugh, I know someone loved doing that. Bless their heart. That wasn't me.
Me neither. Yeah. Me neither. I was like, when are you guys leaving? I still ask them. They're going to be 17 and 21 this summer. And I'm like, are you guys leaving yet? Are you moving out?
So do they cook? Teach them to cook. Give them that cooking task.
My husband does cook though, so I can't. Like, I mean, if I tell him what to cook, so that's where we are with that. But I'm like, oh my god, all you guys do is make a mess. You're not really very helpful. I need to train you to do something.
17 and 21 is still tough.
Yeah, I mean, they're good
kids. But you're over the hump.
Yeah. You're absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. But you're working, so kids and working, and you can't beat yourself up. I know we do it all on our own, but we can't.
Yeah, I know. And you have to pick and choose, just like we said. You have to pick what is important today.
That's right.
And talking to you was important today. So thank you so much for giving me your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun, and we talked about so many cool things. I'm really happy.
Yes, I love talking to you. And please let me know when you're doing something else cool, and I'll talk to you next season.
Okay, sounds great.
When you finish that master class and all that.
Yes, thank you. I definitely will.
Thanks for joining me on this week's episode of Bookshelf Banter with author Autumn Bardot. I hope that you were inspired by her story like I was. Join me next week when I interview author J.N. Supermom. Until then, have a great week.